cash rules everything around me. Cream get the money, dollar dollar bill, yo.
Welcome aboard. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, sort of. It's actually a special edition of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Pod. We're doing a draft guide extravaganza, whoop-de-doo here, and it's focusing on head-to-head points and cats. That's right. I know NFBC gets a lot of love when it comes to our FTN Fantasy Baseball Pod, but oddly enough, the majority of people do play head-to-head. That has been my experience, and that's why we've got a great crew here. It's not just me. There's no Vlad. There's no Matty Davis, although we've got a great crew here, and as the draft guide has kicked off, it's awesome. It's totally worth your time. Please check that out. FTNFantasy.com. Eric Cross, myself, of course, Matty Davis, Matty Wood, Vlad Sedler, and we've got some new people on the crew. There is a lot to dig into with the FTN Fantasy crew. Check that out. But today's crew on the head-to-head tip is two guys that I have never done a show with before, but I'm very excited to be doing it with both of them. It's a unique experience. It's an opportunity to learn from people because I don't get a lot of opportunities to talk head-to-head. I wish I did, and I'm going to take advantage of it today. First off, he is a fellow who works at The Athletic. That's right. You could find his work over at The Athletic. That is one of the most, I mean, it's an institution. The Athletic is legendary, and it is second to none, although some might argue that maybe there is something that's better than The Athletic, but that's not what I'm here to do, right? I'm just here to introduce him. Wow, what a goofy intro this is. His name is Michael Waterloo. Welcome to the show, Michael. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, and I'd say if there's anything that is up to par with The Athletics, definitely FTN, so very, very happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hell yeah. It's great to have you aboard, my friend. And of course, not to be outdone, and surely a man that you're all familiar with. That's right. You know, he's known as Dan. He's known as Dad. His real name is Dad. He's a longtime fantasy sports analyst. You know, 20 years of experience. He's hosted SiriusXM Fantasy, DraftKings stuff, FTN Fantasy, now known as Sports Grid in the past. And, of course, the variety of podcasts, including this season's long preview show he's done known as The Dish, which may or may not return in 2024. Hey, what an intro. That was, Michael, I feel like I totally disrespected you by not mentioning all the other things you wrote. Welcome to the show, Dan Strafford.
Appreciate it. Appreciate being here with both of you. I like to keep things pending for as long as possible. So we'll see if I do the podcast this year or not. But pleasure to be here. Looking forward to talking head-to-head points and head-to-head categories.
That's what the show's about. You people out here who are hearing this right now, you know you love head-to-head. You've been playing it for a long time. You may be new to head-to-head. I mean, some people, I find this, Michael, I'm curious what you think. By the way, Michael, not only at The Athletic, he has a long history working Fantasy Pros and The Game Day, among other publications. And prior to launching his fantasy career in 2011, he covered the Pittsburgh Pirates as a traveling beat writer for 2 years with the Pittsburgh Sporting News. That's awesome. And he's also a very, 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 well, not very, maybe that's too many varies. He enjoys all things Anna Kendrick. I think I'll keep it there.
Who does who? Not?
I don't know who doesn't because she's awesome. But Michael, head-to-head, do you find that head-to-head is the entry point for the majority of fantasy baseball players?
I really think it is, especially for the intro point. I think points leagues are really that intro. At least they should be, because the main fantasy sport out there, let's face it, is fantasy football. So the easiest way to kind of carry that over, because people are very intimidated, I think, because it's a 17-game season, 18-game season. For football, you got to set your lineup once a week. And then for baseball, you're like, that's 162 games. That's a lot. Well, it's like, hey, carry this over, this kind of scoring that you're used to, this breakdown that you're used to in football, and apply it here. So I think it's a great intro just to the casual fan. And there's so many different settings you can have of points leagues, which I absolutely love. You can have the hardcore diehards who love the point league. And then, you know, you may want to switch it up a little bit so you can still have that head-to-head where you can do that trash talk every single week. If you're playing against Dan Strafford, you can say, no, I'm your dad this week because I just beat you here in these head-to-head categories. And you can keep that trash talk going, but maybe, you know, challenge yourself a little bit more by having that intro to roto scoring, but keep the head-to-head feeling.
Yeah, any disagreements there, Dan? I mean, Michael Waterloo is a wise guy. You'd be foolish to disagree with him.
Well, I'm the one from New Jersey, so I guess I'm the wise guy. But I think Yeah. The jokes are just gonna, they're just gonna happen. For me, I think it's an interesting world to actually dive into, because I think you're right. I think people who are starting to play fantasy baseball at this juncture are playing head-to-head points, because CBS, ESPN, all these places will churn them from football into other sports. They'll advertise basketball, baseball, and so on. I do find it that fantasy baseball started with Roto, right? I mean, that's where, and so you will get some purists, to use a polite term, who may look down their nose at head-to-head points and head-to-head categories. But I do think that's where most people are at least entering the fray, or figuring out whether or not they like fantasy baseball. Is the grind too long? Is 6 months of trying to set lineups too much for them to do?
Beautiful. 100% in agreement with both of you gentlemen here. And I will say this. We got head-to-head cats and head-to-head points. Those are two of the mainstay focal points that we're going to look in today as we try to understand what it is, in case you don't know. And of course, strategy around it, how to attack it. What are some of the rules that certain people like to use in these types of leagues? What are some rules that don't work so much? There's a lot of ways to attack it. When you were talking about multiple categories, I mean, Roto people know this. You could punt in Roto, you can punt in head to head. But we're going to talk a little bit more about how you best serve yourself as a fantasy baseball manager in these formats. And of course, like I said, FTNFantasy.com. Our draft guide is second to none. We got 12-team cheat sheets, 15-team cheat sheets. We got rankings, the VDP, best in the business, Vlad's rankings. I mean, it's just chock full. Dynasty, head-to-head, we cover it all. I know this show is about head-to-head today, but we do everything and more, FTNFantasy.com. All right, so the basics. Michael, you sound like you're more of a head-to-head points guy than cats, so just give us the quick basics on what head-to-head points is.
Yeah, I love points leagues. It's something I've played Roto forever. I played categories forever, but I wanted something a little bit different. So I really gravitated to points leagues, and I play fantasy basketball, fantasy football, kind of like Dan was saying. Like, there's that, you can carry over from those sports very easily to the points leagues. So it is basically the rundown of whenever you do something, whenever one of your players does something, you get rewarded for it. So if they get a single, you get a point. If they hit a home run, guess what? You get 4 points for that, but you also get points for a run. You get points for an earned run. Every single thing you can think of is kind of covered. And that's why it makes it really hard sometimes to give advice. Whenever you ask somebody for points leagues, on The Athletic, I write about points leagues all the time. I always ask people, whenever you ask me a question, please let me know what your scoring is. Yes. Because if I give you advice, there's a good chance that your league has a little bit different scoring, and that really comes into play. Because some people will punish a hitter for striking out while making them lose a point. Some people say, hey, no, we're going to take away half a point for that. Same thing with stolen bases and on the pitcher side as well. So it's really just kind of coming together and saying, hey, how do we want to balance this out to reward what the players are doing on the field? So if they're getting a walk, you're going to get a point for it. If a pitcher hits a batter, guess what? You're going to lose a point for that. And it just makes it really, really interesting and kind of changes the strategy and approach from Roto leagues or category leagues, where you're looking at those, you know, we like to call them rabbits in the fantasy baseball community. Players for the longest time, like Billy Hamilton or Adalberto Mondesi, D. Gordon, looking in 2023, how he did C.J. Abrams, you know, even though he had a little bit of pop. But in points leagues, it doesn't really matter as much, because there's no scarcity of those stolen bases or anything, because at the end of the day, your bottom line is getting those points. Whether you're going to get 2 points for a stolen base, or you're going to get 2 points for somebody in San Francisco peppering the wall for a double, you know, really just attacking those gaps. So, it makes it very, very, very interesting. And it takes some practice to get it down, especially if you're a long-term player. But again, that's why it makes it really, really good entry point to kind of cover the basics of baseball, fantasy baseball, at that higher level if you're coming over from football before you're diving into the Roto aspect of it all. And specializing in that scoring is tough, because for a long time, it's always been pitchers dominate points leagues. And you see kind of that 60-40 split. So you really want to have a commissioner who will kind of tweak it as they go to kind of really find that balance, so somebody isn't just stacking arms against you left or right and you don't have a prayer. So there's a lot of strategy involved for something that seemed very simple. And it's something I absolutely love, and I always try to improve it.
I realized, by the way, I'm not even sure I said my own name. I'm Michael Govier, hosting the FTN Fantasy Baseball Special Edition Draft Guide Head-to-Head Blowout Primer, everything you need to know, crash course, whatever you want to call it. But, Dan, where do you come out? Are you more of a cats or points guy? Do you play both?
I'll play categories, but I don't seek it out, right? If I get invited or, you know, it's an industry league or something that I'm trying something to do. But I've been playing head-to-head points league since 99, I want to say, 2000, somewhere in there. It was a league called the Obridge Fantasy Baseball League. That's the town we grew up in. Now I'm part of ZFL, which is the Zimmer Fantasy League. With Mike, you might know it. Both Mikes might know him. Joe Pisapia, who I've known for a long, long time. Joe and I went to high school together, so we've been playing head-to-head. Yeah, true story. Me, Joe, Mike Stein, Fantasy Judgment on Twitter, all went to high school together. Pretty small world. And Dennis Esser, you know, you probably know Esser over at The Athletic. He does their golf write-up, so Dennis went to high school with us as well. Just dropping names, just making it happen.
Keep it coming.
But I head-to-head points for me, Mike nailed it. It covers everything. It lets you enjoy the game of baseball, which has nuance, which has such specific pieces to it, and get into it to cover it all. It's not just hits, it's not RBIs, home runs. It's not that finite. And so head-to-head points for me, I might also nail it in that you have to know your format. You have to know your scoring. You have to know all those things before you step into a draft room. All of these websites are getting better and better with their projections, but they're median projections. They're based on their basic scoring formats. And so if you're going in blind thinking you're getting 4 points for a home run, but your commissioner has tweaked it to 5 points, you're all of a sudden way behind the curve there. And so knowing your format, knowing your scoring, same with the categories, what your categories are, and we'll talk OBP versus average and the different stuff there. So I really think it's the knowledge and ability to then project, right? To look at what the possible outcomes are for a points league. And I'll say the format I love most is head-to-head points all play. So I do get, and we'll talk about it later, but I do get the, well, it's you're playing once a week, one person. There's a lot of, you know, randomness and a lot of things that you can't control. Play everybody every week. And then this way, if you have the second highest point total, you're not going, you know, 0-1, you're going 11-1 because you lose to the person who has the points. So I think that's a good way to balance some things out as well. But love it. Have loved it since, I'd say, 99 or 2000. Lost a lot of money playing at 10 points league. So it's a lot of fun.
I am clearly the head-to-head cats guy here then. Head-to-head points has become important to me. I played my first year in Tout Wars in 2023 in the head-to-head 12-team points, which was CBS's point system, which matters, because Frank Rotto, the man himself, Stample had won back-to-back titles, and the winner in the 12-team head-to-head points in Tout Wars gets to decide the point system for that year, which is really cool, you know? But, of course, he has a lot more experience with it. I never really played on CBS, so that's where you can be at a disadvantage as a player because you might have less experience at CBS, more experience on Yahoo, vice versa. So you got to be aware. It's so important. We're not trying to drive in the ground, but it really is more important than maybe any format to understand what your points settings are. When we're talking about points and looking at players, I guess I wonder, Michael, how do you prep is kind of answered by the fact of what your scoring system is, right? Or is that not always the case?
For the most part, like Dan said, you need to know your scoring system more than anything else. I wrote a leaf for The Athletic a couple years ago for the Office fans to learn your rules. You better know your rules. If you don't, you'll be in your sleep yacht, like the Dwight Schrute song, because you really have to. But what I always recommend people do is take advantage of Fangraphs Auction Calculator. You're able to kind of build out your scoring in there and kind of pick your favorite projection system and plug in what your scoring actually is. And it gets pretty, pretty close. You can get an idea of what it is. But again, you kind of know across the board people who are pretty much covered in the points leagues. It's going to change. There's going to be a lot of people, like Dan said, you may get somebody who hits a lot of home runs. That extra point, if you get 5 instead of 4, that's going to add up for a 40 homer hitter over the course of the year. Same with somebody like Joey Gallo. Are you going to get punished for strikeouts or not? Yep. Is it a full point or a half point? It really, really matters. If you take the extra point for the home runs and you cut in half the penalty for a strikeout, you're looking at 140 extra points right there. Like, it's a really, really big deal. So I always kind of go in there wanting to know what the scoring is going to be. And then I kind of apply it from there, from the projections that I like, from my own model that I run, and just kind of look and say, okay, I want to attack guys who get on base. That's the most important thing for me. I kind of break it down to, okay, lineup positioning. That's why people like Mike Kerlin is so valuable in this community. He does a great job breaking down the projected lineups. I want somebody who's hitting in that upper third, because over the course of the season, I believe it's 13 plate appearances per position down the lineup that you're gaining. Yeah. So from first to second, second to third, I want somebody in that top third, because you're getting that value there of that person getting on base, that person getting the opportunity to produce. So I want that. I want somebody with a good OBP, somebody who hits extra base hits. I really, really like to attack those. And as far as pitchers, I like to look at projected innings, especially whenever it's young guys. And okay, I think the model is always you're projecting for 27 additional innings for those young guys year over year. That's great, but whenever you have a rookie in 2023, like Yuri Perez, when you're projecting him forward, you have to keep that in mind that he's going to kind of have an innings limit. And that's gonna count whether it's at the end of the season, if they set him down like Padres did with Chris Paddock back in the day at the All-Star break. You're going to run into those things. So I want somebody who's going to throw a lot of innings, somebody who has good control. I don't really care about strikeouts as much in points leagues. I'd love to have them, but for me, I want those 180, 200 innings the most. That's the most important thing for me. So that's kind of how I go about preparing. I want to look at the projections for my league and then just kind of map out from there.
That's well said, Michael. And you just made me think about Yuri Perez, who was a very key component of the storyline for my 2023 head-to-head season. Dan, I had Yuri Perez. And we all know he got sent down. Was it July? Did he get sent down around that time?
Yep.
And I knew that he was going to eventually be sent down, and they were going to try to save him because the Miami Marlins were in the playoff hunt, and they could have used Yuri even as a back-end arm in the bullpen if they thought in September. So I traded Yuri Perez away in my head-to-head Cats League for Gavin Williams, who ended up coming on strong. Unfortunately, I traded Gavin Williams again at my trade deadline and didn't get the fruits of his multi-double-digit strikeout performances in August. But the point was, playoffs are coming. This guy's already done a lot for me. I know he's going to fade, or I think he's going to fade. I want to get somebody who's going to perform over the final 6 weeks. Is that how, when you look at playoffs and how important it is to this format, regardless if it's Cats or points, this kind of preparation and strategy is so unique to the head-to-head format and maybe, in my opinion, makes it more special than the others.
Yeah, you go to Roto and talk counting stats, right? You say, okay, we're amassing stats over the course of the year. Candidly, the player doesn't matter, right? You're trying to amass stats by position. You're saying you have your five outfielders, and over the course of the season, you can mix and match whatever way you want. Head-to-head points, you talk two-star pitchers, right? Just as an idea, how much more important a two-star pitcher is in head-to-head than in Roto, because of the opportunity, what Michael was saying around the batting order, same with two-star pitchers. So the churn of being on the waiver wire, getting those two-star pitchers, even the crappy ones, even the ones where you're like, this is maybe it goes 1-1 with a 4.7, but it gives me 16 innings somehow. Like there's just these sort of pieces that you piece together. Trades in head-to-head leagues, I will say this now, I'm the worst to trade with. I'm awful. I recognize that as a fantasy baseball participant. Ask Ariel Cohen, who I think you were probably in the head-to-head points with.
Yep.
Back and forth. He called me once. Like, he was just so fed up with messaging. He's like, we can talk through this. I don't really like trading. But to your point, I think the strategy around lining up for the playoffs, lining up injuries, lining up, rookies coming up, rookies being sent down, how to manage workload, does someone get moved to the bullpen? All of those things play differently in these head-to-head points and head-to-head categories, right? So that you have to maximize your opportunity each week to score points, to put up points.
And going back to your all-play point that you made a little while ago, Dan, Michael, I was thinking about the playoffs and how that would work. I'm curious what Michael thinks first of that, because people might say, well, in the playoffs, all-play? That doesn't make sense unless we only do it during the regular season only.
The playoffs. It's all-play during the season only, yeah.
Okay. I wanted to clarify on that because I figured that was the case. And I am hearing a lot more people, you know, in our Discord around fantasy baseball, regular players are talking more and more in favor of the alt play, which I think is cool. But for playoffs, Michael, fluke outcomes are a nightmare. I've had so many head-to-head regular seasons that were elite, first place all the way through, only to have a bye and then lose in the semifinals. I've had that happen to me at least 5 times. Michael, I know it's happened to you at least once.
Oh, it happens all the time. It happens all the time. And that's kind of the argument for Roto versus head-to-head, right? As you said about it, at the end of the season, the best team is going to be the winner. But Michael, who were the teams in the World Series last year?
Let's see. I remember there was a team that won it named Texas, I believe, and they defeated Arizona?
Yeah. And, you know, nobody really had that going in there. The season before, the Phillies went on a great run. That's kind of the beauty of sports, is the goal is to get to the playoffs. From there, any single thing can happen. And that's kind of like, I think it's pretty cool. You have that in fantasy too. It's all about getting to the playoffs and hoping for the best from there. There's ways that you can kind of improve it a little bit, but if not, why are you playing that? You're eliminating the luck factor and you just want to reward the two best teams. And, you know, we've seen debacles in the past with college football playoffs. How that was, it's just like reward Florida State. They went undefeated and it's just,
oh hey, boy,
how that happened, you know, not to get in them. An Oregon Ducks fan, you know, they should be there, but anyway, they really should. So what I always kind of do is just, I like to kind of have the championship week be a 2-week outcome. I like to kind of build that in. So if you make it to the finals, you do not want to just be like, well, I don't have a shot here because this team has 5 2-star pitchers to my 2. And their 2-star pitchers happen to be Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, and Garrett Cole. And it's like, wow, I'm kind of screwed. So instead of having a 14-day week, I mean, 7-day week, you have a 14-day week. You make it a 2-week scoring period. So that way you kind of balance it out a little bit. And that's kind of the way that I like to run it in my league. So you get to the playoffs, anything can happen. You get to the final week. All right, you got 2 weeks. Good luck, you and the other person.
Nailed it.
You agree with that, Dan?
Yeah, I think, again, you have to embrace the chaos. You're playing head-to-head, whether you're playing all-play or not. So you have to recognize flukes happen, right? Like, that's just the nature of the game. I just looked at I was first place in my fantasy football league. I'm 11-2. Josh Jacobs is out and Keenan Allen is out, both on my team. So now I'm going into my semifinal matchup with AJ Dillon potentially. So it happens, right? This is how it works each week. I think playing 2 weeks for the championship is key. I think it balances out that you get there. Then you get a little cushion in the luck factor not being as prime. I also like ending the season midway through September. Maybe even August, depending on how you play. September call-ups have changed. It's gotten better. It's gotten much better. But this way, you're getting the best baseball. You're getting, now again, Major League Baseball is doing much better of pushing teams to play through September and all that. But it gives you an opportunity. And I'll candidly say, Michael said it before, fantasy football rules the world. I grew up on fantasy baseball. It lets people stay in your league, focused on your league until football is ready to come screaming down the pike. And so if you can do those like first 2 weeks in September as your championship, backdate everything from there, everyone signs your constitution, everyone is on board for the rules, no questions asked, two weeks for the championship, depending on your league size, how many people get into the playoffs matters, right? Top 4 teams. Do you want to do divisions? Do you want to do, you know, conference, whatever structure you want? But I really do think 2 week championship is if you're listening to this and you don't have that right now, think about it. Like, just look at the numbers, look at how it will play out, and highly recommend it as just a way to give those two teams that got there a little breathing room on the luck factor.
So you're saying it's like real life where there's only 5 games in the ALDS, yep, and then there's more games in the ALCS and of course, right, World Series. So you're shaping it like real life. Okay, I hadn't thought about it like that. I don't love the idea of having 1 week, 1 week, 2 weeks suddenly, because it's the title game and they're all important weeks to me. But if we're basing it on reality, I like that. I could see that being useful. But I also, man, I think about head-to-head playoffs and all the disasters that have happened to me over my time. I just wonder, Dan, how soon is too soon? And you start tinkering too much, you know, like Ruxton in the league, you start just, you know, too much tinkering can lead to trouble. how early is too early to start looking at the playoff schedule? I guess when it comes to matchups and even crappy two-start streamers as such.
I think you're always having an eye on roster construction, right? You're always having an eye on how you've built out your team and where cycles will go. Again, minor league call-ups, send-downs, all of those things, innings limits, all matter. And I'm not one to, whatever terrible cliche, put the cart before the horse, right? I'm not one to say I'm making the playoffs, I'm going to start roster constructing simply for that. But being aware of where things shake out and how pitchers line up. Now, injuries happen, rainouts happen. All of these things can really put even a larger luck factor into it all. But I think being aware of your schedule, aware of when the playoffs start, aware of all of those things is key. So you can be, I'm a big fan of trying to be a week early on the waiver wire, right? I think everyone is, but I really try to be aware of
2 weeks ahead.
So, even better. Yeah, I'm a year ahead. No, think about it. 7 minute abs. Something about Mary reference for all of you.
No, six.
Exactly. So I think you can project out, right? And you have to be doing those things, and you have to look at, I think there are some great projections out there that talk about park factors and the changing of weather and all of that has to be baked in. I will caveat that, asterisk, whatever you want to say. Projections already account for that. If you're buying projections from someone and they're worth the money you're paying for them, they've already considered those things in making their model and projecting. Don't double down on Colorado in August or whatever it might be. It's already baked in there.
Oh, there it is. Coors home series in the playoffs. It doesn't matter if they're terrible or not. Whoever's coming in there, if there is a home series at Coors Field during the playoff week, somebody's going to get too intense on it. They might get burned on a pitcher. They might get a great deal and a big return on a hitter, right? But yep. I've seen it all the time. It happens a lot. And Michael, do you agree? Because the season is long, but it's set up the way it is for a reason in MLB. I mean, why are we throwing away multiple weeks at the end of the season? My head-to-head home league, head-to-head Cats 14 team, BYB, shut up, is we're done. The season is done. You would like this, Dan. I think it's the second week of September is the championship week. It's over. And I'm like, we got a couple of weeks left here. So, Michael, do you like taking it all the way, or do you agree with Dan that you should trim it down because there's too much uncertainty at the end?
I love trimming it down. I'm with Dan totally. I love having the championship week, the first week of September. I think it's absolutely key. In Points Leagues Forever, we've referenced you remember him, pitcher for the Marlins, Tom Kohler. For the longest time, he was two-start Tom. But by the end of the season, he was must-start Tom because you didn't know who else was going to be getting rolled out there. And we can talk about luck factors and everything, and it's true. You got to account for them and embrace the chaos. That's going to be there regardless. I don't want my season to come down to even more luck where I'm starting a bunch of players that I've never heard of. I don't know who these guys are, but he's starting today. Okay, I'm going to roll the dice. I need to because this guy shut down. This guy shut down. You know, I think Dan made a great point that MLB is really kind of changing what they're doing for September call-ups. So it's kind of curbed a little bit, but you also really kind of get that key engagement because, again, football rules the world. So whenever you can cut down that season a little bit and you're able to control those luck factors a little bit, I think it's really big. So yeah, I'm a big fan of kind of cutting it down and planning accordingly for that. As far as how far you plan out, it depends on where you're at. It depends on what league roles you have. Are you limited to pickups that you have? Do you have a max that you have three or four per week? It all kind of changes with that. I try to be a week or two ahead as well on the waiver wire, but it all gets kind of thrown out the window once playoffs come. It's like, all right, here's the projected thing. Yeah. And that's the other reason. If you wait till the last week, throw out projected starting rotations. They do not matter. At the end of the year for the Detroit Tigers, like at the end of the season, that team has nothing left to play for. They don't want to throw out Tariq Skubal. They're going to throw out some guy who's just like, hey, hopefully it like in Ivan Nova back in the day. They're like, all right, take the ball one more time. Go out there and throw. You're not projecting for that. So, yeah, I definitely like to kind of cut it out and plan ahead as best as I can.
Yeah, I am a born and raised Metro Detroiter, Tigers guy, obviously. So I remember that. Boy, that was terrible. That was not cool at all. Yeah. No, it's fine. I mean, it's been a disaster for 10 years now since the end of that run they had in 2014-ish. And, of course, Miguel Cabrera is gone now. Rest in peace, big man. Good luck. He's alive, by the way. I don't know why I said that. He's alive and well. In fact, he's playing in Venezuela in the winter ball. So we're here with Dan Strafford, Michael Waterloo. We're talking head-to-head here. Dan, let's get into some of the nitty-gritty when it comes to strategy with head-to-head points. Now, there's a lot of people who have, you know, we already talked about starting pitchers used to carry a ton of weight. That's changed a little bit. It can also be modified depending on what your league scoring is. We're driving that into your brains, folks, again and again. But talk about your strategy with head-to-head points, if you could, I guess, from a perspective as much as you can, without having a detailed scoring format set up in front of you.
Yeah. So preparation for a draft, preparation for the league, all comes down to projections for me at this point, from a math perspective, right? My analysis is finite. I don't get to watch all the players. I do not get to read about every player. I do not get to take in content. So I'm going to get my projections. I'm going to run the projections. What I do from there is I tier everything out. So I do this in Roto too, but I think it's less helpful. But I tier out by point projection, both by position and by round. So I'm projecting who I expect to go in a specific round, right? First round, second round, third round. That's variable, right? You can add 5 points to Michael's point before. You get an extra home run here, or you get all of that changes the dynamic. But that allows me to have tiers of players I'm comfortable taking. I'm not somebody who says I'm going heavy on pitching going into a draft. I'm in the fifth round and I go, oh, wait, I went heavy on pitching because that's the way the draft dictated it. I will say I like auction more and more for that reason. From a strategy perspective, you know, having a budget and being able to say I'm not spending more than X on a pitcher, or I'm not spending more than X on a first baseman, I think is a fun way to go about it. So I do the projections. I tier everything out. I look at where maybe some soft spots are. And I'll also in head to head be an absolute jerk and I'll drown the pool if I can, right? I'll take two third basemen if, you know, the top two third basemen are projected to be so much far and away better than the rest of the pool. So then I have my DH if there's a utility spot, a DH spot, and I have a third baseman. And then the rest of who I'm playing, right, who I'm going against, don't have that advantage, don't have me at that position. So it's head-to-head overall, but it's head-to-head position by position. So I'm trying to strategize around that. I love the idea of draft strategy. I just think you have to be variable on. You have to be malleable. You have to be ready to go any number of ways, even more so in head-to-head, because of these matchups each week, because of the starting pitchers. I love targeting middle relief guys if they're high volume innings and K's guys. So it's all these little strategies within the draft that you have to be ready to deploy. And then I think it's having a few beers. That's a big draft strategy of mine to make sure, you know, we're just going to have a good time and relax. No, but seriously, I think
you're not kidding.
I'm not kidding. But I was. It's fine. There are some stories out there in the world about me drafting, but that's a different story for a different time. It's like my golf game. It's really bad. Then after two beers, it's great. And then after three, it's bad. So if I hit that sweet spot where it's then we're fine. And I think strategy wise, and Michael, I know you had something about, is it pronounced SPARPS? S-P-A-R, starting pitchers as relief pitchers. Is that what it is?
Yes. SPARPS. Okay. Shout out to CBS.
There it is.
Okay. Yes. So I know that's listed. We have a rundown looking behind the glass here. I'm letting you in on how podcasts are recorded. but the note was there from Michael. That's another, right? You're looking for different ways to deploy players, different ways to get an advantage. And I think that's key to draft strategy, being aware of the different ways you can go. I was never a big math guy, both in school and in fantasy baseball. I like to think I can watch them and I know who's better. I have three kids. I don't get to watch as much baseball as I wanted to. I have a full-time job. So I'm going to trust projections, trust the smart people who make the projections, and then use it to my advantage based on my league setup.
Oh man, that was a lot of fun. Nice job, Dan. Michael Waterloo, have you ever played in a league where box were part of your points? No, I'm just kidding. Well, maybe you have, actually. But no, okay, so can you talk more about Sparps, which CBS made famous, of course, versus, you know, relief pitcher heavy, depending if you have holds, if you have K9 as a category in points, which would, I don't know if it's as great in points as it is in head-to-head cats, in my opinion, but give us some other tidbits about how you strategize and execute your head-to-head points teams.
Yeah, absolutely. I have never played in a league with box, but I have for like perfect games and no hitters. You get bonus points for those. So that's a lot of fun.
By the way, real quick, I will say one. I started a league in 2014, like a keeper league on Yahoo, a head-to-head league. And I included for a full season, we used it, we played it, fielding percentage.
That's an inclusive game right there.
It is. That sounds like too far. That sounds like an Autono type league setup that you have there. Who they also have points leagues there, run through Fangraphs. So, as far as just kind of structuring my team and just kind of the strategies that I have, I agree a lot with what Dan said there. And the thing about points leagues, the rosters are typically a lot smaller. A lot of points leagues, you have three outfielders instead of five. You have one catcher. Every league should have one.
Thank the Lord.
Oh, boy.
Yes. You have one catcher instead of two. You have, the starting rotation is a lot smaller. You might have SP, SP, RP, RP, and then pitcher. That's it. And so there's a lot of kind of churn and burn. So you really want to, I kind of look at that like a 10 team versus a 12 team or 12 team versus a 15. I really just want to kind of maximize that talent. And I'll tell anybody that in a shallower league, give me talent every single day, because that waiver wire, you're able just to pull off of there and kind of fill in that replacement level type player. So I always kind of keep that in mind. And you hear pitchers are king every single time. And to a point, I agree, but volume is king for me. So if you look in 2019, there were 33 pitchers who threw at least 180 innings. Get rid of 2020 because of the season. Get rid of 2021 because people were building back up their arms. There were 20 pitchers then who threw at least 180 innings. But you look at 2 years ago, it was 27. Last year, it was 25 pitchers who threw 180 innings. You're starting to see that go down and down and down. So I really want those guys. And sometimes those guys who throw a lot of innings, yeah, you'll have your aces in there. You're going to pay an ace price for them. You know who else is in there? Guys like Marcus Stroman.
Yeah.
Guys like Hyunjin Ryu, Miles Michaelis, Adam Wainwright. Zach Greinke for the longest time was a great points league guy. He's throwing 85 mile per hour out there. He's not racking up the strikes outs, but you know what he's doing? He's racking up those points still because of the volume that he's getting with his control he has. To Dan's point early on, I want to get talent. I don't care if I have that ace. If I have a staff made up of Miles Michaelis, if Blake Snell, Hyunjin Ryu, and all of these guys who are going to throw, I'm more than happy with that, especially I can get them at a suppressed cost. And the other thing I really like to target are those Sparps. Again, those are starting pitchers as relief pitchers. Shout out CBS every single time for those. Those are guys who the year before they qualified as relievers and they carry over that eligibility to the following season. You look going into 2024, it's Cool Ragans. He's a big one. A couple of years ago, Ross Stripling was always one who I would always target because of the way the Dodgers used him. Corbin Burns, his breakout season, had RP eligibility. What that does, that gives you a leg up because you get that extra starter each week. You're able to put them into that designated relief pitcher spot where somebody else may be filling that with a Hector Neris. And again, that comes back to that head-to-head, not just in the categories or the points, but position by position too. So you get that leg up in there, and more times than not, that pitcher, that relief pitcher, that spark is going to outscore a closer because you need your closer to get maybe two saves a week.
Talk about luck. Do they get the opportunity to get this? Yeah, 100%.
Exactly. You have to have at least two saves for a closer to match that one outing by a spark. And you need really three to make sure. If it's a two-start week for a spark, good luck. Don't even pay attention because you're done in that category. Because that spark is just going to outscore you. It doesn't matter if it's two-start Tom Kohler. They are going to be the person that carries you there. And, like Dan said, those middle relievers are so undervalued. If you have extra pitching spots and you just need those quiet points, you can get them at the end of the draft and they cost you absolutely nothing. Same with guys who get you holds if you have points for holds, which if you want to elevate the value of traditional closers and traditional relievers in your leagues, you really should have points for holds too, to kind of bring that up a little bit and make it a little bit more even.
Hell yes. Wow. This is,
I almost gave that an amen, but I didn't know if that was too over the top, but you came up with the hell yeah. So I dig it.
Yeah. Those hell yeah. Amen. Pretty similar, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Just no let's goes. I'm sick of let's go. Can we have something a little more original? I mean, I get it. It's fun to have enthusiasm, but there's a lot of words in the English language. I'm just saying. This is the FTL Draft Guide. Head-to-head Jubilee. How about that? This is a Jubilee, not a Palooza. I think we should use Jubilee more than Palooza. Of course, FTN Fantasy. A hootenanny, a hoedown, and a whoop-de-doo, which I already used. So that's now I'm a tired cliche. Damn it. All right. Either way, FTNFantasy.com is not tired. FVDP rankings. Vlad Sedler, Rotogut, the god of fantasy baseball. I mean, there's a lot of gods in fantasy baseball. A lot of deities to worship. There's nothing wrong with Vlad Sedler's VDP rankings. That's a great place. Check it out, ftnfantasy.com. All right, Michael Waterloo, myself, Michael Govian, of course, Dan Strafford here. We're going to move into head-to-head cats, but I want to make a couple more points about head-to-head points real quick here. Dan, every league we've talked about, know your settings, but I think it's universal for scoring settings and head-to-head points where innings pitched are always, whether they get more like 3 points, 2 points, 1 points, whatever. But innings pitched are always going to be a point value of scoring in head-to-head points leagues, right?
Again, unless your league has decided not to do it, the default typically is to award something for innings pitched.
It's pitch. Pretty universal, I would say.
I thinking back, there's one league I'm in that awards them too highly, right? Like that it was like James Shields' year where he was awful, but pitched 200 innings and you're like, I shouldn't be losing to him. but I, it is fairly universal. It's, again, it's rewarding the fact that they went through the inning, right? And you tie that to something like whip in cats or roto. It's a similar way of looking at it, that you get a point, a half point, something to say that you did your job. I've had arguments with people then say, well, why don't you reward at bats then? I don't see it as a one-to-one. But I again, do what you want in your own league. I won't play in it, but set up the settings the way you want and enjoy it, right? If everyone in your league agrees, go for it. If you want to do foul balls, fine, whatever. You can track that data now. But yes, to your question, which I answered way too long, I could have just said yes. Yes, that is the case, that it's typically rewarding in some way.
Yeah, and Michael, you don't have, I mean, that's the way it should be for you, right? I mean, whether it gets too many points or not is another debate, but I assume every points head-to-head league you've ever played in, innings pitch, get some type of value.
Just about. The only other kind of adjustment you can make is give a pitcher a point per out instead. So that way they can get, instead of 3 points for an inning, they get 1 point per out. So that way if they go 5 2/3, they can still get those points there. And then the extra bonus for a quality start, or the rare case for a drop third strike where the pitcher, where the hitter advances the first base and you have that rare opportunity to get a 4 point inning for a pitcher, also has that kind of variance in there. But yeah, overall from the overarching sense, yeah, you get points for the innings.
Oh, I knew it. I knew it. It's just the way it is. It was really weird to be the first time I played in a head-to-head points league, and that was a category. I'm like, in head-to-head cats, it's just not something you would see. You wouldn't. So it was really foreign to me. But as time went on, I grew more accustomed to it. But I really like that idea of an out. I'm always looking to progress, right? How can we do things better? How can we be more efficient, or I don't know, more realistic, more symbolism of what's actually happening on the field with less percentage of luck? There's always going to be luck because sports always will have a percentage and element of luck. I'm not trying to get rid of all that, but I don't know. I'm always in the pursuit of the perfect league and the perfect scoring setting. And Dan, as far as, you know, looking at high volume players versus hitters versus pitchers versus guys that walk more or strike out more, kind of flesh that out for me, how you really kind of perceive all that in a head-to-head points league from your own viewpoint, which would, of course, only be your viewpoint because you're speaking for yourself.
Who knows? I could be reading, you know, Fantasy Pros or whatever right now verbatim, and you guys wouldn't know.
I don't know.
It's like Ron Burgundy. So I think, again, the idea to chase any one specific player type is a fool's errand, is a losing strategy in any fantasy sport to me. I think that when you go into a draft and say, I am drafting this type of player only. With that said, obviously your first few rounds, you are going to get well-rounded pitchers or hitters, right? You're going to get guys who are filling stat sheets in various ways. And as you move forward in these drafts, I think Michael nailed it before and bring this back. The D Gordons of the world, that maybe not D Gordon, but like those guys, the Billy Hamilton, there he is. That's the guy. I think everyone has been Billy Hamilton in their life. I think, or Mondesi, it allows you to push them to the side. It allows you to evaluate a player on their entire portfolio, on their entire opportunity set, each and every time they step to the plate. Not, will he still steal a base? Will he even get on base to try to steal a base? And I think that allows you to potentially have advantage against your league mates for guys who play both roto and head-to-head points, because it is often people who play in a lot of leagues aren't parsing out the data between the league types all the time. And so you have an opportunity to say, value Billy Hamilton accurately in your league, as opposed to someone who plays roto as well and sees him, well, his ADP is 423. I'm getting him at 419 value. You get here where you can do that. Beyond that, I think just comparing and contrasting what build you want to have. Michael's nailed a lot of this already around. I don't need the high K guys. I need the volume guys. I need guys in the top third of the lineup. I need guys on good teams. I need guys who have players around them who are going to get on base, because RBIs are a team stat when everything is said and done. So I think that's a very rudimentary, very simple way of answering, but I take what the draft gives me. I take what the auction gives me, and I try to then, you know, make my moves where I can. Fantasy baseball drafts are won in rounds 12 through 25. Maybe off by a round or two there, but it really, that's where the strategy comes in. That's where the build comes in. That's where being able to look at a league and say, hey, this guy is not valued properly by the rest of the league because they're looking at ADP. I'm going to jump around on him. I'm going to go after him here to get him on my roster because I know he's going to be a value to me.
Well, we haven't talked about, real quickly, I guess, Michael, I wish Rotoga was here. He'd probably have the best answer. But when it comes to fab, right, or waiver wires, adding guys in-season management of adding and dropping players, is the points league have any exceptions that make it stand out as opposed to roto leagues or other types of formats?
Yeah, I think you can kind of be more I don't think you're going to see people blowing like 20% of their fab as often because streaming is such a big part of the head-to-head game. With those pitchers throughout the season, you're going to be targeting those two-star pitchers. You can't afford to spend 10% of your fab every single week. You're going to be out of it. So you really have to just kind of like commit, like, okay, if there's somebody like a Holy Rodriguez in 2022 when he broke camp, all right, I'm going to go after him, but I realize this is going to set me back throughout the rest of the season. I really have to like manage my pitching exceptionally well versus, all right, hey, congratulations to the Julio Rodriguez person. That's fantastic. I'm going to trust my process here. I'm going to really like, I'm looking at my draft right now and it's just like, I'm going with that boring pitching staff where I'm counting on these guys and you know, I'm counting on the streamers there. So there is a little bit of an adjustment there, as well as looking at people who are in platoons, because kind of like Dan said, at the end of the year in Roto, you just kind of care about the outcome. You care about the numbers, but in head-to-head points, you might have somebody like, or in head-to-head in general, somebody like Jock Peterson, who for the longest time, like he would play against righties. He was sitting against lefties. And whenever you're going into your week and you're like, oh, there's four lefties on there in Roto, I know that can hurt me, but it will hurt me a little bit less by the end of the year. It all evens out. But if I have three outfielders, Jock Peterson's one of them, I'm going to have two outfielders that week because he's not going to play much. So there are those kind of in-season adjustments you have to look at. And that's where it really pays off to know like who's coming down the pipeline. If Jock Peterson has four lefties on the schedule one week, three on the next, I can probably just rotate him out. And, you know, I can either put him on my bench if I have deep enough bench depending on my bench construction, which is another huge thing in the format, or I'm just going to drop him for somebody else and just stream that outfield position to ride the hot hand. So there is a lot of in-season management with it.
Woo! Great call, Waterloo, on the platooning. Dan, more than ever, platooning is a huge part of more and more team strategies. I'm talking about real MLB teams, not fantasy teams.
Right.
So in points leagues, head-to-head, and cats even, weekly matchups, platoon opportunities are going to have a much, much bigger importance on a week-to-week schedule than a season-long. So I'm really glad that you brought that up, Michael, and I assume, Dan, you would agree that more than ever, you need to be aware and maybe look at somebody like Kurland or FTNFantasy.com when it comes to lineups and who's playing this week. You know, Vlad's epic, legendary article, which is as good as it gets. I mean, Vlad Sedler's weekly fab article is not just about adding and dropping and how much to spend. He's including matchups, lefties, righties, who's pitching, who's not, who will lose at bats, who will gain at bats. And I assume that that's something you're obviously looking at, too.
One of the greatest things about getting older is that you learn who's smarter than you. And Vlad's article every week is a go-to for me easily. So shout out to him always. He's also a great dude and everyone knows that. But that article is so fine-tuned and so well-written to the point about matchups. Yes, I think you need to, that's even a draft strategy. It's not just a weekly lineup setting strategy. Michael said, you need to be aware of, I might lose Jock Peterson for an entire week. I might lose Harrison Bader for X number because the Yankees are going to get Stanton into the outplay. Those are all things that you need to be able to project because that affects your point totals. And so you have to be on top of that. Even if you're just simply doing, CBS has it where you can toggle to the matchups for the week. Yahoo has it. Make sure you're looking. Make sure you're aware of it because you don't want to be caught in a 5-game week. Right. That's first of all, an outfielder only plays 5 games and they face 4 lefties in that 5-game week. You got to be on the waiver wire. You got to be churning. You got to be figuring out where things are and what the best way to put a team forward that can hopefully pull off a win when you're down one of your drafted guys.
This is good stuff. I hope you guys are soaking all this up. Michael Waterloo and Dan Stratford are crushing it here. I'm Michael Govia. I work at FTN as well, and I'm just one of the crew. We've got a great crew at FTN. But
not just one of the crew.
Just one of the guys. Which, by the way, I love. A great 80s movie.
I was about very to say.
You know just one of the guys?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that scene at the end.
It's underrated. I'll say
when
that.
When you look back on that scene as an adult, you're like, wow. 80s movies were different.
How would anybody fall for that? Yeah. Okay, yeah, you're right. I'll leave it there. If anybody knows what we're talking about, you know what we're talking about. And if not, Google it. By the way, head-to-head cats, which is getting slighted on the show because these guys are points wizards. And, you know, rightfully so. We should be talking about head-to-head points because these guys are dropping knowledge. But I'm a head-to-head cats guy, and I always was. It was my foray into this game. It's how I started. I said my home league is still a head-to-head cats league, 14-team BYB. It's a keeper league, too, which is always a nice addition to points leagues and cats leagues, is having keepers or dynasty, of course, that you could be doing all of that. You can include all these wonderful tools and options in your league. But when it comes to punting, head-to-head cats, you can win. You can win your league flat out and truly punt. There's no doubt about it. Michael, for me, having too many categories beyond a standard 5x5, whether you replace average with OBP or whatever you do, going beyond 10 cats in head-to-head cats is a mistake, in my opinion, because it could get really messy. Next thing you know, I was in a league with like 16 cats for a long time, and it was so convoluted about the players I was starting versus who I was benching and how my pitchers were negatively impacting my hitters. It was just like it was everything everywhere all at once, and it made no sense, basically. That's what it was. So for me, I think you should just stay at 10 cats in head-to-head leagues and keep it there, regardless of what those 10 cats are. What do you think, Mike?
I like a good 5x5 the most. I will go 6x6. I kind of try to tap out there. That's the most I'll do, and it has to be really set up well. Again, you get too many, then you run into two categories. You're covering the same thing, so why do you even have these in here? What's the point of it? One of my friends, God bless him, I love him, and his friends, they have a home league for 15 years where it's 7x6, and it's just like, that's just unbalanced, first off, with pitcher and hitting, and it also, it's just way too much, and the scoring doesn't make sense. But yeah, it's a good 5x5. And again, I'll hear the argument for average versus OBP, for wins versus quality starts, for saves plus holds, or just saves by himself. That's fine. But 5x5 is the best way. And even with that, you're able to kind of do the punting. And punting really, really works. I have really carried that over from Fantasy Hoops. I think if you're not punting in 8 or 9 cat Fantasy Hoops, then you're not playing the game the right way, because you really kind of need to. And yeah, you don't absolutely need to in fantasy baseball, but you can do it. You can do it well. No matter which category you decide to punt, there's an avenue there that you can really strengthen your team around. And especially if you have that simplified 5x5 scoring, you're able to do it.
And depending on your league minimum innings pitched or the amount of moves you could do per week, you could really, really focus. Like, Dan, you could have a slugger-heavy draft to just be like, we're crushing the ball. That's how we're going to win here. We're going to win 4 out of 5, at least, of the hitting categories. Maybe we won't get steals. And then we'll have a bunch of closers and relievers, and we'll win saves. And we'll win 6-4, 7-3 every week with lower ratios. And you could win a title that way. I've seen it happen.
100%. And I think the beauty of head-to-head categories is, again, sort of the all play that I was talking about before, is no one week is going to sink or swim your season, right? A 5-5 week, a 7-4, like, I have terrible math there, 7-3 week.
Still not good with the math.
Nope, not going to happen. Give me the projections, damn it. I think you have the opportunity to make things up, right? And make in-season moves and go. The one thing I would, if someone's starting out playing head-to-head categories for the first time, the one thing I think this is every draft strategy, there are smart people writing draft content, maybe like FTN's draft strategy and guide that we have going on here. Other people read those things. So you aren't the only person subscribing to The Athletic. You're not the only person reading all of these great things out in the world. So going into a draft saying, I'm punting saves, is not the best strategy. Being open to punting saves is the strategy. Being open to punting stolen bases is the strategy. It's not putting a line in the sand saying, I am doing this, because then again, you are already limiting your draft pool. You're already limiting your upside and your value, because you're saying, relief pitchers suck. I'm not going for saves. All right, cool. But if somebody drops, you know, Ian Kennedy drops, just to have some fun here, he drops to a place that his value, oh, I'm punting saves, I don't want him. Well, you're shooting yourself in the foot that you're not getting the right value at each draft slot or each dollar value in an auction, because you've predetermined what you're doing.
Wow, that was pretty impressive, Dan. I must check out the big brain on Dan. No, that makes a lot of sense to me. Being open, not just having a flat absolutist strategy, is such a simple change, but
do amazing videos on Twitter talking about life, and you have your other podcasts out there in the world, and that's life, right? It's being open to ideas, but not being resolute in only one idea working. And so the sooner, hey, you're a 20-year-old listening to this podcast, playing fantasy baseball, there's your dad advice. The dad came through. There it is. Just be open to it. Open to it, and then make a choice. And go for it and see what happens. And that's the beauty of being multiple leagues. You can try different things. You can draft different ways to see how teams build out. There is obviously some NFBC stuff out there that you can play multiple different types of games. And so I think just be open to the different strategies you have, and don't call yourself, I punt saves every year. Okay, cool. I doubt you do, actually, right? It just doesn't work that way, because, again, smart people in your league. And if you're in a league where people aren't smart, then leave that league. Don't challenge yourself a little, live a little, and swim in the deep end of the pool.
This is where, if I was doing my show, the Palazzo Podcast, I would have hit the don't be that guy button for sure. Absolutely. Well said, Dan. Final thoughts here as we close up this wonderful jubilee of head-to-head strategy and methods and concepts, etc. Michael, got to get you on the record, but OBP over average, is that the way of the future? Or are you open to playing in leagues that have both? You'd like to have a little bit of average leagues, a little bit OBP over here. What's your take?
So I think about this the same way I do about the Triple Crown argument. And about a decade ago, I was on a podcast, video cast at that time, whatever they were called, with Travis Sawchik from The Score. And we were all talking about what should the main three things be for the Triple Crown. And Travis said, keep it how it is, because that attracts the casual viewer. It helps them understand. You don't have to like say, okay, we're going to use war. We're going to use this. We're going to use this, because you want to help them understand and attract those fans, because baseball already has the reputation of being a very difficult, long sport. And like, it has all these analytics and it scares people away sometimes. But so like, I think both have a place. And kind of like Dan said, you want to challenge yourself, but if you're starting off and you just want to have a simplified league, keep batting average, keep the traditional five stats there, because that'll help you understand those discussions whenever you're hearing these conversations around draft strategy and roto leagues versus category leagues. And you're like, okay, they're both using these 5x5 here, so I can kind of translate those over to my league. But as you're playing and you want to challenge yourself a little bit, then you can say, you know what, I realize that OBP really encapsulates the value for a player more than batting average does, because it kind of counts everything they do. And saves, you know, you're not seeing these being used the way they were. You're not having these traditional people. You're having guys used in these high leverage situations. So I'm going to have saves plus holds. So I think they all have a place, and it really just depends on your league and the people around there. And if you're trying to introduce, and if you're a parent and you want to introduce your children in there, you want to keep it simplified. If you're bringing over your football friends and you want to bring them over, keep it simplified. And as you go, challenge yourself a little bit more and switch it up to OBP and switch it up to saves plus holds.
Woo!
Love it.
Yeah, I love it too. I like what you're saying. Dan, we had the Moneyball era. I mean, we're still in it, I guess. We're never going to go back from it, but it got very powerful, went too far, three true outcomes, ruined the game. Now we've had the rule changes at MLB, which I think were, for me, an absolute win for the game, and players that can hit doubles and triples and get on base and steal more bags, fun plays, athletic plays. We're seeing all that again in the game, and I want to see that represented in fantasy. So I'm actually seeing why I might be able to go back to batting average, but you could also have batting average included in OBP. So is this a debate to you, OBP versus average?
I think it's a debate because people like to debate and people like to think they're right, and I'm one of them.
Oh, you are. I was going to say, you're not one of them. You are. Okay.
I tend to be. I like OBP because it encapsulates more, right? So, but I think Michael just preached, and I mean that in the best way possible. Like, that is a great approach to it. If we're trying to grow this game of fantasy baseball, make it inviting, make it inclusive, make it able to be stepped into. The phrase inside baseball exists because there's so much that happens that you have to explain, and and why make that the fantasy game? The thing I'd say about OBP versus average is I'd prefer to play an OBP league, right? So that's where I would go. I would choose that, but I have no problem with people still utilizing average. I do want to say before, I know we're wrapping soon, my most controversial thing in head-to-head categories, especially team bullpens, get rid of closers. Let's go full fantasy football here. You draft a defense, you draft a bullpen, and you get the stats for the year from that bullpen. See what I don't actually want to do that. I just like saying it to piss people off. But I do think it's an interesting way to think. To Michael's point, be creative. See what exists. See what works. See what works for your group of guys and gals who are playing because you've been playing for 20 years or you're first starting a league. But I do think there are ways to be inventive in the way we create the categories, the way we create the point structure, the way we create the league in general to be more inclusive, to be more fun. And to limit the luck and limit the changes the game's seeing. And just to be on record, I agree. I hated the pitch clock idea. I loved baseball last year. I like baseball was fun again. Even Yankee games. I'm a Yankee fan. Like, I could sit through an entire Yankee game. I didn't have to get up to pee seven times because the game lasted four and a half hours. I don't pee seven times in 4 hours. I'm not that old yet. But I do think they made good changes. And again, I said it before, I've grown a lot in the past year. I've grown a lot in the past 42 years, being open to change and being open to things changing. It just lets you not lose all your hair like I did, worrying about things I didn't have control over. So same in fantasy baseball, same in fantasy sports. Enjoy it. It's meant to be fun. It's meant to be a good time and something that's a passion, hopefully, for you. And I think head-to-head has all of it there for you.
All right. That was a great way to wrap this up. But Michael and Dan, you guys brought the thunder. You brought it home. Yes, there are barriers still that prevent people from enjoying this wonderful game of baseball. I do think baseball is on the come, though. I really do. I think that people are open to what the rule changes were, and it's attracting new fans. And
more bat flips.
More bat flips. There's a lot of fun players, obviously, that are already here but are also up and coming. There always is. I am really excited about the future of baseball and fantasy baseball. We should be open to, you know, we should be gatekeeping. We should be flooding those gates with new people to come on in and try to play this fun game, which to me is just as fun as fantasy football, if not better. Yes. Michael Waterloo, this was a pleasure. We finally did a podcast together. Anything you would like to say as we close out this show? I'm giving you the floor.
No, not at all. I appreciate you having me. And yeah, let's have some fun. Just have some fun with this. Have some fun in life. And yeah, just don't take it too seriously. And yeah, appreciate you having me.
That's right. Make sure you follow him on Twitter or X or whatever the hell it is, which is what you have to say that now. Yep. It's required. At Michael Waterloo. And then, of course, Dan Stratford. Yeah. What's your final word, sir?
Pleasure. Great hearing both of you talk baseball as someone who's been in the industry longer than I realize. I'm really happy there are some great people who just keep pushing content out and doing great work. And so congrats to both of you on the careers you're building. And to everyone who's listening, just subscribe to FTN. No, I'm kidding. You do that anyway, but enjoy it. Have fun. Enjoy playing fantasy baseball. Find the things you enjoy about it. Find the league you enjoy. And enjoy the process. Enjoy the 6 month slog that is fantasy baseball.
Yay! Well said. That's a lot of fun. I want to thank you guys for doing this with me. Of course, thanks to Vlad Sedler, the master of the FTN fantasy baseball realm, and everybody. FTNFantasy.com. Go see who's there. Eric Cross, Matty Wood, Adam. Our whole crew is tight. We got newcomers on the way. You'll see them. There's so much to just really, really take in and win money, win your leagues, be the best, learn something, and also have a good time along the way. And that's why I love doing the show. Thanks to FTN and thanks to Michael and Dan. I'm Michael Govier. This has been the Head-to-Head Jubilee. Whatchamacallit. Thanks for being a part of the show. We'll be right back.